Hi, welcome to the Napcast, your source of geekly entertainment. My name is David.
And my name is Seth, and we have a new guest with us here on the podcast. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Jules.
Jules, your voice
is
so unbelievably low, it's not fair.
Thank you.
We know.
I can talk. I had a voice this low back in season one when I was sick, but that doesn't count, and that's just not fair. So, all right, Jules, we've got a random question for you. So, Seth, what have we got?
Who is your favorite Spider-Man that isn't Peter Parker?
Ooh, tricky question.
Probably Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man of 2099.
Really? Okay.
I've always had a soft spot for
Miguel. I can get behind that decision.
A Spider-Man of the future. Can you give us a little context, specifically for the people who don't know what that is?
Okay, so Spider-Man 2099 was the first of a series of 2099 comics that Marvel did back in the 90s.
Yeah,
which was back in a weird time for everybody.
Okay.
But it's about superheroes in the year of, you guessed it, 2099.
What?
The first of which is Spider-Man, who's a character named Miguel O'Hara, who's a scientist working for one of the many sort of like super companies that now like rule the world as opposed to countries now.
Because apparently mega corporations always rule the world in the future.
Yes.
It seems to be a running theme in the
literature. Who wants to rule the world?
A billionaire is currently president, so.
Fair.
That's true. How does this compare, for example, to like Batman Beyond, where that was like an old retired Batman who now has a younger Batman? Is this the same kind of scenario where it was like an old Spider-Man and it's just a newer guy that's taking up the mantle?
No.
If I understand it correctly, Miguel O'Hara kind of got his powers by a completely different freak accident.
But he got the same powers?
He did. But
essentially.
His powers are different. He has like fangs for one, which are kind of weird. And as opposed to just being able to like stick to things, he has like miniature talons that like stick out of his fingers.
Okay.
Which he can also use to like slash and hurt people with. So that's cool.
Don't get in a cat fight with Miguel O'Hara.
But yes, his powers were coming from like an experiment that like he ran, I think. I haven't read them in a while.
Okay.
I think he head it up.
But the goal was to repeat Spider-Man's powers. And it's like long after like every hero that we know and love from like the current like Marvel universe has been like long gone.
With the exception of Wolverine and Deadpool, because they don't die. Actually, I have no idea.
They're not around as far as I know in the 2099.
Wow, that's a shame. That's
universe.
A great concept.
Doctor Doom
though.
Is around.
They
and he claims to be Doom from the past.
I thought they referenced Wolverine at one point, but I could be wrong.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, probably.
All right. So, Jules, now that we've asked you a question, you can ask either one of us or both any question you'd like.
All right. Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland, which is your favorite and why?
Oh,
and this is actually a perfect segue into the topic for today.
Coming.
Our topic for today is actually Spider-Man specifically, so that's a great starter question.
So, I'm going to be really boring and say that I like all three of them for different reasons.
Ooh.
Like, Tobey Maguire is my favorite Peter Parker. Andrew Garfield is my favorite Spider-Man.
Okay.
Tom Holland is a toss-up because I feel like he bridges the gap between the two because he's a younger Spider-Man. We've really never seen that in a movie before.
And you know, that's actually very similar to what my answer was going
to be. Oh, no.
Because what I like about Andrew Garfield is he's got like that science-y type of like, he's got the scientific approach to Spider-Man of, I've got these powers, now what do I do with them? I'm going to research things in a lab. He's like a very smart kid. Tobey Maguire never really came across as that smart of a kid.
Except for that one scene in Spider-Man 2 where he's like spinning that wheel in his apartment. I don't know why.
Sure, I guess. But he doesn't come across as like that nerdy of a Spider-Man, which I would prefer to have. But then Tobey Maguire does have some characteristics of like, yes, he's socially awkward, so is Andrew Garfield. But I like Tobey Maguire more as like the character developing as a Spider-Man rather than the scientific side of what you can do with a Spider-Man. That was poorly explained. But what I really like about the Spider-Man from like Spider-Man Homecoming, the third character, is that he's a very young, excited, like fanboy type Spider-Man. And that fits Spider-Man's character perfectly as well. In that like he gets to meet up with Captain America. You're Captain America! Ah!
He's very much like from Brian Michael Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
Which, like, they borrow a lot from in The Amazing Spider-Man as well. But in terms of Peter's character specifically, he's, like, stripped right from the Ultimate Spider-Man pages in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
Which is why I like Tom Holland the most.
That's the one that you would go with the most?
Yes.
I'm not as familiar with that one. So I do like all three as well for differing reasons. Same with Seth.
So well, then, if we haven't completely given it away, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man on this episode.
Spider-Man?
What? Spider-Man? I thought we were talking about Batman the whole time.
We were.
I'm Batman.
I mean, they're basically the same character.
I'm Spider-Man. Yay! So talking about Spider-Man movies specifically, now I'm not as familiar with Spider-Man Homecoming or like the Marvel Spider-Man, the newer one with Mark Holland.
Tom Holland.
Okay, with Tom Holland. But comparing like Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, those series, there are a lot of different aspects that people tend to disagree on what makes one better than the other. So Jules, starting with you, we'll start with, say, the villains. Which villains did you like better from those series?
Well, that's a hard one.
It is a difficult question because both series have a lot of villains.
Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus is still to this day like the greatest Spider-Man villain we've had on screen.
It is a great portrayal of Doc Ock. I will agree.
But I've actually had a bit of a beef with the Green Goblin from Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man because I love Willem Dafoe. There it is.
Yeah.
I love him. I like how he did the Green Goblin, but I didn't like his Norman Osborn.
I never felt like it was smart enough, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
Norman Osborn
is supposed to be like this brilliant billionaire, almost Lex Luthor type that could snap at any second.
That didn't come across to me at all.
He was just the mad scientist dude with the dumb Power Rangers mask.
If you look at the Norman Osborn in the comic books, this is the guy that goes on to take Nick Fury's place as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and turns it into Hammer, and we have the whole Dark Reign storyline from post-Civil War.
Wow.
But I can't see that coming from the Norman Osborn we had in Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man.
That is true. What about the
then they killed him and...
Well, yeah.
Don't tell Harry.
What about the Norman Osborn from the other series?
He was in there for like 2 minutes.
I know.
And then they cut his head off and put him in a freezer.
Thermo something hyperplasia, made up screenwriter's discretion disease.
I would have loved to see what Chris Cooper would have done with Norman Osborn if he hadn't just been laying in a bed for 2 minutes and then they cut his head off and stuck it in a freezer.
Harry,
I
want to
know
I'm
what the heck Mark Webb was thinking when he planned out Amazing Spider-Man as a trilogy. Okay, I want to know what 3 was going to be.
We stop for a second and talk about the fact that the director of The Amazing Spider-Man's last name was Mark Webb?
Yes, he was born the director.
I cannot get over that.
That's an amazing little factoid for the day. Harry Osborn, on the other hand, did you like his portrayal better in The Amazing Spider-Man or is it just the Spider-Man trilogy?
I mean, again, it comes down to like just the amount of development that Harry had in one versus the other.
Yeah.
I like Dane DeHaan. I think again, if he had different script to work with and more time to work with it, he could have been just as good as James Franco was
downer.
In the original trilogy. But James Franco's Harry Osborn's like story arc is probably like one of my favorite from the original trilogy.
I really did like it.
I think I'd agree with that.
It's one of the few like through lines from the original Spider-Man trilogy.
Now that's one of the through lines where overall, it's a great story arc. I do take issue with it in the third one, though, where he becomes a villain early on. Now, he becomes a great villain early on because they needed a villain at the beginning.
And then they had too many villains.
And then they gave him amnesia. And it's like, very conveniently, he's forgotten everything up until this one very random
That's
moment in time.
That's straight out of the comic books, actually.
Oh,
the
really?
Green Goblins deal with amnesia all the time.
Well, then maybe that's an issue with
the comics,
they're
jinxed.
I don't know, but I mean, and then he comes back around to be the villain at the end, and that villain didn't seem like his second reappearance as Green Goblin was like, okay, really? I'm sure that's from the comics, but that seemed out of left field. You could have wrapped up the movie before that point in that movie, but his overall story arc was great. Someone whose story arc was awful, though, in my opinion, you can feel free to argue with me, is Mary Jane from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans.
Yes.
She didn't do anything.
Never loved
at all.
A single live-action portrayal of Mary Jane to this day.
Gwen Stacy?
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm honestly intrigued, because I know you happen to be a big fan of Spider-Man Homecoming.
And even the Mary Jane in that was awful.
She's not Mary Jane though. She's Michelle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
that was the problem that I had.
Kevin Feige even came out and said like MJ is just supposed to be more of a reference rather than she's actually Mary Jane.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Which just bugs me because I've yet to see a live action portrayal of Peter and Mary Jane that I like absolutely adore. No, spiders are erected.
I know. I was making a pun. Deal with it.
It wasn't a very well researched pun. Do your research. Okay.
I'm smarter than that, I swear.
No, but Mary Jane in the original, well, the Tobey Maguire trilogy, one of the things I take issue with the most is that at the end of Spider-Man 1, Peter Parker had the girl. Like, he had won her over and he turned her down. But then in Spider-Man 2, he goes to Doc Ock, I mean, yes, for research, but then he asks him about poetry and he's like, how do I get the girl? I read her poetry. And he tries to win Mary Jane back, but he already had Mary Jane. It's dumb. I don't understand.
The one that got away in more ways than one.
Legitimately, like, it's just Peter's whole character arc in Spider-Man 2. At the end of the first Spider-Man, he's like, okay, I'm Spider-Man, and as long as I have this, Mary Jane's something I can't have. Right. And then in Spider-Man 2, that conflict comes back, because, like, people deal with, like, their issues again and again all the time. So, like, this is just, like, Peter's, like, constant insecurities cropping back up, and he's just like, okay, I want both of these things, but I can't have both of those things. And so in one point in Spider-Man 2, though, he chooses, like, okay, I'm not going to have Spider-Man, and I'm going to go for Mary Jane instead.
Yeah, that makes more sense than the way I saw it, which was, I've got the girl. I'm going to turn her down. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. I want the girl again. And that didn't make any sense. The way you described it does make more sense. I'm still going to say, though, that Mary Jane's character, there's no character arc. There's nothing that she does except to serve as a love interest for Peter, and that's really all she's there for. Gwen Stacy, on the other hand, in The Amazing Spider-Man, actually helps him out. And they actually feel like they have chemistry on screen.
Gwen Stacy and Peter and Gwen is like the whole reason why I love The Amazing Spider-Man movies. Like that relationship, I was absolutely sold on every second they were on screen together.
His closet is the most cliched hiding place you could have chosen. I'm sorry!
I didn't choose the Bahamas of hiding places.
But they actually
talking about that, actually, I'm probably going to drive you nuts with this question. But
ooh, I can't wait.
Peter and Gwen or Peter and Mary Jane?
Peter and Mary Jane.
Really?
Yes.
But in the comics, I think Gwen is supposed to die and Mary Jane comes later.
She does.
Or is it the other way around?
Actually, both characters are introduced around the exact same time.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
Both as love interests.
Oh.
And then Peter got together with Gwen, but then Gwen died.
And then Mary Jane.
Peter and Mary Jane played Will They, Won't They for about 130 or so issues before Mary Jane finally admits to Peter that she's known he was Spider-Man the whole time. And then she finally opens up about her backstory, which we haven't really known up until about issue 270-something.
I didn't realize there were that many Spider-Man issues.
They're on
issue,
like
issue number 800 is just about to come out.
Wow. I was going to say, it's been going for a long time.
End of Dan Slott's run on the comic books, which has also been one of the longest runs for Spider-Man ever, because he's been writing for the past 10 years, and he's written over a fifth of every single issue that's been written.
So then,
they were doing fine, and then we got one more day. I'm sorry, I had to bring it up.
As much as I love Spider-Man, it's amazing how many storylines that he as a character has that are just like utterly reviled by every comic book fan under the sun. There's the Clone Saga, there's Sin's Past, which I don't want to talk about.
I didn't realize people hated the Clone Saga.
Oh, lots of people hate the Clone Saga.
It was cool.
So you need to read more comics.
The original conceit of the Clone Saga was cool, but it got marred down by a bunch of publication and just like behind the scenes like drama, and so by the time like they realized like we need to end this, nobody knew how it actually was supposed to end because the original writers weren't there anymore.
Shoot.
Okay, so maybe
and
we
it
should...
went on way. It was supposed to be a 6-issue miniseries.
You're joking.
I'm not.
And how many?
It went on for like 3 years.
Oh no.
So, but getting back to Seth's question, because I do want to ask why Mary Jane and Peter Parker over Gwen Stacy and Peter Parker.
Mary Jane is the perfect foil to Peter's like character.
And I guess that just wasn't portrayed in the movies.
Is that yes, no. It was
okay,
not.
Okay.
Peter's that shy, nerdy introvert that like, you know, all of like the comic book readers like can identify with. And Mary Jane is the complete antithesis to that.
She's the redhead with green eyes.
Right.
It's like the party girl. She's the outgoing extrovert. She's the perfect foil and complement to who Peter is as a person. Plus they understand each other on a level that like even Peter and Gwen never quite did.
Would they have gotten there had Gwen still been around, though, do you think?
That's hard to say. There's a great comic book called Spider-Man Blue that kind of deals like with Peter and Gwen's relationship in light of Mary Jane. But the thing about Gwen is like in the comic books she hated Spider-Man.
Interesting.
Which was always like the biggest obstacle between Peter and Gwen ever like becoming something more than what they were. Because Peter like probably would have wound up marrying her if she hadn't been murdered by the Green Goblin.
Oh,
but, spoilers.
Yes. Well, we knew
spoilers
that
for the 40-some-year-old comic book. Sorry. But yeah, so like Gwen blamed the death of her father on Spider-Man. And so that was always
this
an obstacle
familiar.
In Peter and Gwen's relationship because Peter could never find the courage to tell Gwen that he was Spider-Man because he was afraid of what would happen between them if he
did. But that sounds like something that was put in the movies then with different characters here and there, but that same sort of concept.
But I heard Harry said he wants Spider-Man dead. But his buddy Pete, he can trust.
That's from Weird Al's parody of Piano Man, is
Ode
that right?
Ode to a Superhero.
Yeah.
I love that
it's
one.
It's a great song.
I want to get into Weird Al, but getting back to Spider-Man, what was my question? You sidetracked me, Seth.
I know. Well, we probably should stop here and actually explain the Clone Saga for people who may not be familiar with it.
Definitely. I'm curious about this.
Okay, cracks knuckles. So the Clone Saga started off as a 6-issue miniseries. It was supposed to be about Peter Parker's old clone from...
Old clone?
Yes.
Yep.
From way back in the 60s, who we thought was dead for about 30 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But as it turns
out,
he
comes back.
Not
he's
dead.
Been alive all this time,
and living in Tahiti. Right?
He has blonde hair. He has blonde hair, and he goes by the name Ben Reilly. The idea behind the Clone Saga was that they wanted to phase Peter out because he and Mary Jane were at the time pregnant, and they were afraid that if Peter became a father and like furthered this relationship that he had with like his now burgeoning family, he would lose his everyman appeal. So they came up with the idea like, okay, we replace him with the clone and we still have Peter Parker.
But
now he's single and now he's Spider-Man and he retains that everyman quality while Peter Parker still gets to go live his life with his family.
And why are we going to do this? Because we want more readers of our comics.
Yes. Well. But anyways.
Capitalism.
I said.
Wait. Boo. Okay.
It got turned into from a 6-issue miniseries to like a 3-4 year like saga.
Oof.
That went across like all the different Spider-Man spinoffs that were also in publication at the time. Nobody knew how it was supposed to end. No one knew how they wanted to end it. The backlash on Ben Reilly taking over was way worse than Marvel thought it was going to be.
Because Peter freaking
like,
Parker.
Okay, now we need to bring Peter Parker back, but he's still going to be a dad. So let's end it with Norman Osborn coming back and kidnapping Peter's baby.
Because of course.
Because that
and then
sense.
Killing Ben Reilly.
And then so killing the baby
that
and
is,
Mary
And then Mayday never came back.
Yeah, that is basically the Clone Saga in a small nutshell. So you can basically assume that Peter's daughter is dead somewhere, which is really depressing.
Don't tell me that. I can still hold on to Spider-Girl.
You think Batman is tragic, but if you think of all the things Spider-Man has lost.
Spider-Man has had to put up with so much crap over the years.
Speaking of
especially
Spider-Girl,
from Joe Quesada.
Oh.
I'm not bitter. Not at all.
Talk about that man to me.
I wanted to ask, because I heard you mention Spider-Girl, and I was thinking earlier, I remember seeing, I believe it was Gwen that became Spider-Girl, but like in an alternate universe?
Yes, yeah. She was introduced in the giant like
we were just talking about
Spider event
timeline.
Called
yeah, this
Spider-Verse,
Spider-Verse,
which is probably my favorite like story that Dan Slott has written.
I haven't read Spider-Verse yet, but
it's
I really
amazing.
Want to.
He says every Spider-Man ever, and he meant it. but yeah, so there
is
there
a pirate
it's like,
Spider-Man.
It's like this alternate timeline where Gwen got bit by the spider. Peter is the lizard and like dies.
Like the same lizard that they used in Amazing Spider-Man 1?
Yeah. Peter, like, turns into the lizard.
That's so messed up.
It's really depressing. And he, like, dies. But, yeah.
But of course,
like,
you have to kill him off she's so referred Gwen to can his... be falling in love with the actual Spider-Man from the alternate universe. You have to.
Oh, no.
That's just plot writing 101.
Yeah, and now Ultimate Spider-Man is in 616, but that's a whole other mess.
Awkward.
thank you, Secret Wars.
Yay! But,
yeah, so Spider-Gwen is from an alternate universe where Gwen Stacy is Spider-Woman.
Right.
She's referred to as Spider-Woman within the story, not Spider-Gwen, because otherwise, why would you have a secret identity?
Secret identity? What secret identity, Tony Stark?
Can you imagine me going to, like, the grocery store dressed up like this? Sorry, that's an Incredibles reference. So back to Spider-Woman, not Spider-Gwen.
Well played, sir.
So Spider-Gwen, you were mentioning.
Yes.
So she shows up in these comics. Does she become a love interest, per se, for Peter?
No.
Thank goodness.
Like,
there's
a little bit of that there when they see each other because they've both lost their, like, respective Peter and Gwen. So, like, but it's much more of a, like, they realize we're from separate universes and at very different points in our lives at this point. And, like, we've moved past those losses. But there's that acknowledgement of, like, yeah, like, we keep running into each other, even, like, across dimensions.
Interesting.
It's like it was meant to be, except it
wasn't. I was about to say that. Does that Gwen, does her father still die from the Green Goblin? And then she hates Spider-Man? Probably not.
Well, first
That'd
of all.
That'd be a little awkward if it's her.
It wasn't the Green Goblin that killed Captain Stacy. It was Doc Ock.
Oh.
Yes.
I was thinking Green Goblin for some reason.
Yeah.
I get my villains he all mixed up because there's so many of them.
But no, I don't think so. I think her dad is still alive in the Spider-Gwen timeline. I haven't actually gone through and read most of those because I only have so much money. But
are those part of a separate
don't we all?
Like, comic universe?
What?
Are those part of a separate comic line?
Yeah, it's its own thing.
No, Spider-Gwen is just it's its own thing. It's not like another universe that's, like, cropped up around it. She's crossed back over to 616 a few times. I think she was also part of a series called Web Warriors, which was, like, a bunch of different Spider-Men and women kind of protecting the multiverse.
Spider people.
It happened after Spider-Verse. But, yeah. So, she's got her own thing going on. She's got an awesome costume. Like, it's just super cool looking.
And I do have to ask, do you think Spider-Man, for all the losses he's endured, would be considered a very, very tragic hero along the same lines as, say, Batman, who lost, obviously, his parents? Spoiler? That's not a spoiler.
Well, define tragic. Because,
well,
like,
Batman's very much a tragic, like, dark hero, renegade, vigilante almost.
Well, that's
very much
that's
so.
What makes Peter Parker so interesting is despite all this, like, this legitimate tragedy that happens around him. Because if you, like, go through the people he's lost, he lost his parents.
Right, but
he
never comes
kid.
Across he's as, like, tragic.
Lost
despite...
his, lost his, exactly, that's what makes him amazing is the
yeah,
fact
oddly
that
enough.
he retains this optimism and, like... Like, this, his personality and his character is like so steadfast no matter the obstacles that come in his way. Like,
except for those times when it doesn't. And
all the way
he's
back
scary.
In like Amazing Spider-Man issue was it 33, that like super iconic scene of him like under all that rubble and like that cure for his Aunt May, who's like infected with like radioactive poisoning from
because
like, his
course.
Blood.
Oops.
from a transfusion that he gave her like a few issues before.
Oops.
But like the cure is like right in front of him and like he thinks he can't get it, and then like he remembers all the people that he cares for and he remembers what he's fighting for, and he just lifts that rubble off of his shoulders and he gets
yes.
it and he wins the day anyways. So I'm like, and that's like, it's like such an iconic moment for Spider-Man because it was like, it was really like Stan Lee cementing this is who this character is at that point.
That's one of those moments where in a comic strip that still comes across as like very powerful. Did they ever do something like that? I know there were a bunch of like TV shows. Did they ever use like that kind of scene in the TV shows?
Yes, it was.
Did
in
it
home,
ever work?
It was actually in Spider-Man: Homecoming.
That's right. It was in Homecoming.
Sent chills down my spine when like I saw him under all that
I
rubble and he's like crying
that.
Out for help. I'm like, oh my gosh,
wait,
they're
this is
doing
from the
it.
Comics.
It's finally on screen. Like. There's like a subtle reference to it in Spider-Man 2 when like that warehouse is like falling down and like catches it. And he's like, this is really heavy. But
oh, I remember that.
See, I had the same reaction to Gwen Stacy dying at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I was like, I knew it was going to happen the entire movie.
I did
and
too.
I was still in tears when she hit the ground. It was like, I was like, no.
So I didn't realize what they were doing until that scene. And then the longer the scene went on, I just got this sinking feeling.
The second
like,
I heard Green Goblin was going
it.
To be in the movie, I'm like, she's dead.
She's gone. She's just dead. It's
Had
fine.
They done a third one, I think they were going to bring in a Mary Jane.
They actually shot some scenes with Shane Lean Woodley as Mary Jane, but they cut them because they wanted the focus to be on Peter and Gwen.
And then
which
she went
that
on
sounds
to be
actually
in
like
Divergent.
A smart, smart decision there, really, keeping the focus on Peter and Gwen, because that really worked. So,
I'm just
movie.
Real sad because they never like released those deleted scenes, and I'd be really interested
Aww.
In watching them.
Yeah,
just
I would too.
Shane Lean Woodley as Mary Jane is
Although
see what we
Shailene
could have
Woodley
potentially
usually
got.
Doesn't have red hair.
Yeah, she
Did
had
they dye it red.
She
or?
Dyed it sort of red. Like you could still tell she had brown hair,
but
it
was reddish.
It was like reddish. It was like kind of like that really like dark red. Mm. That's like. It wasn't like a like eye poppingly like I am a redhead and like you will see me from across the room that Mary Jane is supposed to be.
Right.
But
face it, Tiger.
Whatever.
But if that's how it usually is in the comics, you think they would have gotten backlash for it. Oh, she's not like it was in the comics.
Oh, trust me. I saw like the behind the scenes like photos of them shooting the things and I was like,
You were part
I'll
of the
I'll reserve
backlash.
Judgment until I see it. But
then you never saw it, so you're still holding that judgment.
Exactly. Going back to villains in the Spider-Man
that's
movies.
Right.
What did you think of Michael Keaton's Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming?
He was great. I'll be honest, comic book Vulture is super boring. He's
Agreed.
Just an old guy in a bird costume who wants to steal things.
Honestly,
That's literally how he's introduced.
Fair enough.
Honestly, I felt like Michael Keaton's Vulture was the best part of Homecoming.
Oh yeah, it was Spider-Man versus Batman.
I was going to
awesome.
Say, Michael Keaton was a Batman. So the weird parallel.
There's actually like one tiny shot in Spider-Man Homecoming that's like could be seen as a subtle Batman nod. It's when the Vulture and Spider-Man first run into each other after he's done chasing the Shockers. When the Vulture like takes him up in the air and then drops him, it lingers just a little bit with the Vulture up against the moon and it kind of looks like the bat
suit.
Now I have to ask, just because I'm curious and I honestly don't remember, does the Vulture costume allow him to turn his head?
Yes.
Oh. I was hoping for the parallels because the Batman outfits up until I believe
the
it was Dark Knight Rises.
Yep.
They could never turn their head, which was intentional because, getting off topic, they wanted Batman to move differently than everyone else. So he, in order to turn and look at someone, he had to turn his whole head and look at them or his whole chest and everything. And then they realized that was kind of silly.
Well, I
Dark
think Christian
Knight
Bale
Rises.
Complained about it too because like, yeah, you had that like massive cowl and like just to turn and look at someone, you just have to move your whole body. And that's just annoying.
I can see that.
So there was a nice joke about that in The Dark Knight because he's like, can I turn my head in this one?
We should make backing out of the driveway a lot easier. What do you want with spelunking and backing out of
but
the driveway?
I think actually that was like a complaint from like every actor that's played Batman.
Is that
sense.
He can't turn
Except
his head.
For Adam West, obviously, because this was just a cloth costume. But
was that the
know.
One that was like the very cheesy sound effects?
Yes.
I can never remember my Batman. Is that the one?
Batman.
Seth, is that the one who's running around like, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb?
Yeah, that's Adam West's
okay.
Batman.
With like the eyebrows? So.
Nice to see that we're still talking about Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course. Spider-Man and Batman are so similar.
They're my two favorite heroes.
It's
so
like they're the same character.
I don't think so. Though I have to ask, in any of the Spider-Man comics, since you've read at least a lot of them, if not most of them, way more than I have for sure, does he ever do crossovers with other...
Yes.
What other heroes specifically?
Well,
he's done crossovers. Like, there's a really iconic one of Spider-Man versus Superman.
Really?
I did not know about that one,
Fun
actually.
Fact, Spider-Man wins.
How?
No.
Lex Luthor and Dr. Octopus are like the villains of the story, and
of
they
course.
Like zap Spider-Man with like
so that's cheating.
Like red kryptonite like rays. Okay. So like Spider-Man, whenever he like hits Superman, can actually hurt Superman.
Wow.
So that's really it wears off though, and like Spider-Man like throws a punch and like breaks his hand.
Oh,
God. He's like, oh wait, time
and
to leave.
And Superman's like, can we talk now? And he's like, okay. But so, and then Spider-Man's actually done a couple of crossovers with Batman.
I was about to ask.
Which I love, because like I love seeing those two characters bounce off of one another, because they both have like similar tragic backstories.
But
in terms of personality, you can't get more different.
What even
it's like when Batman and Wally West hang out. It's pretty similar.
Oh no.
Well, it's like Spidey wants to like crack jokes all the time and Batman's just like, I'm Batman. But,
well, even in-universe, Spider-Man hangs out with the Fantastic Four a lot.
Oh, really? Yeah. In fact, actually,
wait,
in like...
Fantastic Four was Marvel. Spider-Man hanging out with Superman and Batman is DC.
That's a...
But Spider-Man was also Marvel. Now I'm all confused. Which one does he belong to again?
Spider-Man belongs to Marvel.
The big two did a lot of crossovers back in the 80s and 90s. There was a big Justice League and Avengers crossover that I haven't read, but I really want to.
How do you even get enough villains for that?
At one point, it involves Superman holding Thor's hammer and Captain America's shield.
Oh, gosh.
Because why not?
I've seen that panel. It just looks amazing.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
That's something I'd like to see in a movie one day that will probably never happen.
Not to mention, if you tried to do that nowadays, getting the budget, first of all, to have that many actors.
I mean, we look at Infinity War and realize just like how crazy that is, let alone like throwing two universes together.
I know. And getting two like studios at this point, competing studios to do something together just isn't likely. Flash forward to 5 years down
Disney
the line.
Maybe Disney will buy WB too.
Please, God, no.
Oh, Disney will own everything. You know that meme with Disney with the Thanos glove? Acquiring everything. Like
Disney's going to be Alchemax in 2099. I swear.
There we go.
We get a 2099 Mickey Mouse and Spider-Man crossover.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. All right. Well, as much as I love talking about Spider-Man, I want to keep talking with you both after Mike. We got to wrap up this episode. So, Jules, thank you so much for joining us. It was awesome to learn about Spider-Man and things that I honestly didn't know.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And the way we usually wrap this up, Seth and I, since we both have perfect pitch, we ask you to give us a random note out of thin air. You just name the note, and we will harmonize and sing goodbye on that note.
We can do three parts.
So, like,
oh, we could.
Do I like vocalize the note or just
you can just say the note? Or if you wanted to, you could sing along
with
us.
It's up to you, really.
I like vocalize a note and let you guys harmonize with it.
All right, so you just start humming a note and we'll sing goodbye with it.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.